Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Obituaries. Kenneth Allen Wallace passed away on December the 1st. A memorial service and celebration of life will be held at 2 p.m. on Sunday, December the 10th, at Kenny's Hot Rod Shop, located at 5014 Andrews Highway. Susan Irene Beeman passed away on Saturday, December the 2nd. Visitation will be held at Baum, Carlock, Baumgartner Funeral Home, December the 14th, from 5 to 7 p.m. Funeral services will be held at Indian Creek Baptist Church, December the 15th, at 10 a.m. Interment immediately following at Woodland Park Cemetery in Mineral Wells. Floyd George Brown, age 82, passed away on December the 2nd. A celebration of life service will be held 1 p.m. Saturday, December the 16th, at Sherwood Baptist Church, 505 East 42nd Street in Odessa. Arrangements are entrusted to Acres West Funeral Chapel. Boyd Wesley Brawley Sr., age 90 of Odessa, died Monday, December the 4th in San Angelo. Funeral service was held at 10 a.m. Friday, December the 8th at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Joseph Ruben Castillo, age 89 of Midland, died Sunday, December the 3rd. Funeral service was held at 10 a.m. December the 8th at American Heritage Funeral Home. Billy Deal, age 54 of Odessa, died Thursday, November the 23rd in Dallas. Memorial service will be held at 10 a.m. Thursday, December the 14th at the Emmanuel Baptist Church. Lorenzo Ruben Dominguez, age 78 of Midland, died Sunday, December the 3rd. Mass will be celebrated at 1 p.m. December the 9th, Our Lady of Guadalupe. Burial immediately following in American Heritage Cemetery. Jack L. Hubbard, age 89 of Odessa, died Monday, December the 4th in Sweetwater. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Tuesday, December the 12th at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Burial follows at Odessa the 2 Gardens section of Ector County Cemetery. Emma Porras, age 70 of Odessa, died Tuesday, December the 5th in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 1 p.m. Monday, December the 11th at the Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. Burial follows at Odessa 2 Garden section of Ector County Cemetery. Juan Rodriguez, age 44 of Midland, died Monday, November the 20th in Midland. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by the American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Johnny Whitley, age 71 of Millsap, Texas, died Wednesday, November the 29th in Millsap. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Gilbreth Pickard Funeral Chapel of Weatherford. Dorothy Fife Stewart, age 87, passed peacefully on November the 23rd, surrounded by her loved ones. A private memorial service with family will be planned in the spring. Gloria Ann Godfrey, age 80 of Odessa, went to be with her Lord and Savior for eternity on December the 6th. Graveside services will be held Tuesday, December the 12th at 10 a.m. at Sunset Memorial Gardens in Odessa. Charles Eugene Laughlin, Jr., age 82, passed away on Friday, December the 1st, in San Antonio. Graveside service will be held Saturday, December the 16th, 12 p.m. at the Liberty Hill Cemetery, 16101 State Highway 29, West Liberty Hill, Texas. Obituaries. Kenneth Allen Wallace passed away on December the 1st. A memorial service and celebration of life will be held at 2 p.m. on Sunday, December the 10th, at Kenny's Hot Rod Shop, located at 5014 Andrews Highway. Susan Irene Beeman passed away on Saturday, December the 2nd. Visitation will be held at Baum Carlock Baumgartner Funeral Home December the 14th from 5 to 7 p.m. Funeral services will be held at Indian Creek Baptist Church December the 15th at 10 a.m. Interment immediately following at Woodland Park Cemetery in Mineral Wells. Floyd George Brown, age 82, passed away on December the 2nd. A celebration of life service will be held 1 p.m. Saturday, December the 16th at Sherwood Baptist Church, 505 East 42nd Street in Odessa. Arrangements are entrusted to Acres West Funeral Chapel. Boyd Wesley Brawley Sr., age 90 of Odessa, died Monday, December the 4th in San Angelo. Funeral service was held at 10 a.m. Friday, December the 8th at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Joseph Ruben Castillo, age 89 of Midland, died Sunday, December the 3rd. Funeral service was held at 10 a.m. December the 8th at American Heritage Funeral Home. Billy Deal, age 54 of Odessa, died Thursday, November the 23rd in Dallas. Memorial service will be held at 10 a.m. Thursday, December the 14th at the Emmanuel Baptist Church. Lorenzo Ruben Dominguez, age 78 of Midland, died Sunday, December the 3rd. Mass will be celebrated at 1 p.m. December the 9th, Our Lady of Guadalupe. Burial immediately following in American Heritage Cemetery. Jack L. Hubbard, age 89 of Odessa, died Monday, December the 4th in Sweetwater. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Tuesday, December the 12th at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Burial follows at Odessa the 2 Gardens section of Ector County Cemetery. Emma Porras, age 70 of Odessa, died Tuesday, December the 5th in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 1 p.m. Monday, December the 11th at the Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. Burial follows at Odessa 2 Garden section of Ector County Cemetery. Juan Rodriguez, age 44 of Midland, died Monday, November the 20th in Midland. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by the American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Johnny Whitley, age 71 of Millsap, Texas, died Wednesday, November the 29th in Millsap. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Gilbreth Pickard Funeral Chapel of Weatherford. Dorothy Fife Stewart, age 87, passed peacefully on November the 23rd, surrounded by her loved ones. A private memorial service with family will be planned in the spring. Gloria Ann Godfrey, age 80 of Odessa, went to be with her Lord and Savior for eternity on December the 6th. Graveside services will be held Tuesday, December the 12th at 10 a.m. at Sunset Memorial Gardens in Odessa. Charles Eugene Laughlin, Jr., age 82, passed away on Friday, December the 1st, in San Antonio. Graveside service will be held Saturday, December the 16th, 12 p.m. at the Liberty Hill Cemetery, 16101 State Highway 29, West Liberty Hill, Texas. Continuing to grow, U.S. Senator John Cornyn, Republican of Texas, former Secretary of Commerce Don Evans, and Bruce Bug Jr., Chairman of the Texas Transportation Commission, helped the Permian Strategic Partnership mark its upcoming fifth anniversary Friday. The event included a roundtable discussion with energy executives and a fireside chat in the ZAT room at Odessa College that focused on transportation, healthcare, workforce, and education. Evans, the Permian Strategic Partnership Chairman, said PSP is a partnership of 27 organizations, 25 energy companies, and 2 university systems. We've had tremendous success. We've invested about $165 million, and we've brought into the area about $1.5 billion. Because of that, the Permian Basin community is safer and stronger. The education system is improving, and so we're highlighting a number of those investments that we've been making, but also highlighting the public-private partnerships we have with the state of Texas and with the federal government, Evans said. He added that Bug and Corin work with PSP to find funds to bring to the Permian Basin and support the initiatives that PSP is focused on. I want all the people at the Permian Basin to know it's because of them that America is the number one producer of oil and gas in the world. We're at the very center of it right here. If we were a country, we'd be the third largest producing country in the world. We've got the most secure supply of energy in the world right here. So all the people of the Permian Basin need to know that, and what a blessing this, quite frankly, is for all of us out here and for the country and for our fellow citizens, Evans said. For the future, Evans said, PSP will continue to grow. We're very focused on education. We're going to continue to strengthen our education systems. And when I hear that only 40% of fourth graders can read at a grade level in the area, that's a problem. So we're going to continue to focus on that. See how we can support education across the Permian Basin, he added. Evans noted that the behavioral health hospital that has started construction between Odessa and Midland, and that more healthcare facilities are going to be brought in. He added that they are working closely with the state and federal government on infrastructure, safe roads, making roads safer, and continuing to develop workforce programs. We're training them locally, and it may not just be oil field. It may be nurses. It may be doctors. So we're very focused on continuing to develop the workforce in this area, Evans said. Corin said to him, it's about quality of life. We have incredible natural resources here and incredible companies and innovators who are producing those resources for the benefit not only of the region, of the state, but literally for the world. But it's going to require workers and people who want to come to work and participate in that, which means life issues like healthcare, education, transportation. All these issues are so critical to their success here and the continued development of this incredible natural resource from this region, Corin said. Ultimately, he said, this means more jobs so more people can come to Texas, find employment, work for their families, put food on the table, and pursue their dreams. To me, that's what makes this so exciting, Corin said. From the standpoint of the state, Bug said the Permian Basin has about 11% of the fatalities statewide. We are committed to safety. We're committed to bringing the number down. And so, as chairman of the Texas Department of Transportation, what I'm doing is trying to bring the state dollars to bear on improving the roads, improving the engineer so that the fatalities in the Permian Basin go down dramatically. It's a shared responsibility. Safety is a shared responsibility, and so we're going to try to do what we can to engineer the roads correctly so that Secretary Evans has the ability to say to the Permian Strategic Partnership and to the community at large in Midland and Odessa that TxDOT is doing what they can to engineer the roads the right way and to improve the roads the right way. We're spending literally billions of dollars in this area to do that, Bug said. They had committed $3 billion, but are now committed to $6.3 billion just for the Permian Basin infrastructure improvements, he added. Corin said a lot of issues brought up by Evans and Bug have broad application. Obviously, they've got specific application here, but as we discussed upstairs, access to health care and the impact of things like telehealth, particularly in rural parts of our state. It's hard to train enough professionals to provide the resources, the services that we need. So a renewed commitment to things like expanding access to telehealth, making sure access to broadband is available, Corin said. He added that so much of the education system had to go remote during COVID. That's actually opened our eyes to new possibilities and expanding access to education. A lot of this has, as I said, broader application, but obviously I represent the 30 million people in Texas. So my focus is on what we can do in this area, which is a national treasure, to develop it and to make sure that this potential continues to reap benefits for the people of Texas, Corn said. He added that it was exciting to have everyone together Friday and great to be back in West Texas, where people actually believe in working together and finding common ground and solving problems. Corn said that's what Texas does so successfully. He noted that the one-size-fits-all mentality in Washington does not fit in Texas, and Texas has to show the rest of the world what that looks like. That's not necessarily because of government. It's because of the initiative of private citizens and people who are willing to create opportunities and take advantage of the wonderful God-given natural resources for the benefit of the community and the nation and literally for the planet, he said.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram's oil report for Saturday, December 9th. CO2-enhanced oil recovery barrels, key to low-carbon energy world. The story was written by Mel McEwen, oil editor. A series of competing priorities has ensnared the energy transition and the foundation of carbon management, carbon capture, utilization, and storage. Opening the annual CO2 conference at the Barbara and George H.W. Bush Convention Center, fellow Kushkra, President, Advanced Resources International, listed those competing priorities as energy security, affordability, and industrial competitiveness. Russia's invasion of Ukraine almost 2 years ago moved energy security to the top of the transition agenda, he told the audience. The nation's shales let the U.S. attain energy independence and domestic energy security, he continued. The nation's tight oil shale production grew steadily to 9 million barrels a day in 2023, approximately 70% of the more than 13 million barrels the U.S. produced, he said. Of that 9 million barrels, 5.5 million barrels came from the Permian Basin. Further, carbon dioxide-based enhanced oil recovery yielded 300,000 of those barrels, according to Kushkra. Likewise, shale gas and associated natural gas production has climbed, providing 93 billion cubic feet per day, or 90% of the approximate 104 billion cubic feet per day produced in the U.S. Kushkra's key point was, quote, these same resources will need to play an essential role in supporting continued domestic security and an increasingly fragile international energy security, end quote. There will be continued demand for fossil fuels over the next decades, despite the push for more electric vehicles and the pursuit of biofuels, he predicted. One step in making fossil fuels more widely acceptable is the production of low-carbon, even negative carbon intensity oil through EOR, and letting the market or new incentives substitute that oil for conventional, higher carbon intensity oil. Today, CO2 EOR uses and stores 8 million cubic feet of CO2 per barrel of recovered oil. Raising that to 10 MMCF of anthropogenic CO2 per barrel of recovered oil would provide full-cycle negative carbon intensity oil supplies, he said. Adding carbon capture, utilization, and sequestration to natural gas production would open a critical pathway for reducing carbon emissions from electric generation, he added. Carbon capture, utilization, and sequestration, quote, needs to happen quicker, and Kushkra offered 5 action items to strengthen its use. Provide initiatives for improving CO2 capture. Extend the eligibility for 45Q tax credits to 30 years. Equalize the 45Q tax credit for CO2 storage with CO2-based EOR with a credit for CO2 sequestration. Eliminate the deadline for startup of construction for CCS projects, but maintain incentives for early movers. Pursue legislation similar to eminent domain granted natural gas pipelines to give eminent domain authority to state and federal governments for CO2 pipelines. Quote, carbon management and its flagship carbon capture and sequestration could become a major industry with large-scale opportunities, he said. Outreach, collaboration, key to realizing carbon projects. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. There are 2 reasons carbon capture and sequestration, CCS, are being discussed: energy security and climate change. CCS, Joanna Walker, geologist with Tetra Tech, told attendees that the CO2 conference is a bridge to alternative energy options and is an option for long-term fossil fuel use if needed. There is a steep learning curve, but the oil and gas industry brings technology and experience to the issue, she added. There are challenges as the Biden administration pushes to develop low-carbon or negative-carbon energy. Those include operational monitoring of CCS projects, a water quality threshold, financial assurance, estimating the cost of the potential impact of the project, data management, materials selection and geochemistry, area of review calculations, and public support and regulatory collaboration. Opposition to such projects can center around the injection wells, subsurface pipelines, the construction of pipelines, and concerns about the risks of seismicity, infrastructure failures, and contamination of water. Those concerns come not just from the public, but regulators, she added. Companies planning CCS projects must utilize outreach to gain support, including coordinating with state and federal regulators, sending out notifications of the project, holding public hearings, soliciting public comment, and reaching out to a broad set of stakeholders. Take the opportunity to translate complex information to audience-appropriate levels. Quote, you want to speak to the community to ensure they understand what you are doing, that you're aware of the risks and have ways to address them, she said. Regulators focus on the regulations and don't care about a project developer's schedule or costs, which is why it's important to meet with them early and often throughout the process, she said. The people listening to her, she said, quote, are uniquely qualified to help move this industry forward, end quote.
Dear Dr. Roach, I have been using light salt, which has 50% less sodium than regular table salt. Do you agree that this is okay? Dr. Roach answers, lower sodium salt substitutes are generally made from potassium salts. Sometimes they're all potassium, and sometimes they're a mixture of sodium and potassium salts. The evidence is pretty strong that increasing potassium and decreasing sodium in your diet reduces heart disease risk, and controlled studies have proven that potassium salt substitutes lower blood pressure. For most people, potassium-based salts are safe. However, there are a few people who need to be cautious. Those with chronic kidney disease of any kind should talk to their doctor first. Many medications can increase blood potassium levels through their effect on the kidney, including ACE inhibitors, angiotensin receptor blockers, and spironolactone. People taking these should also discuss potassium-based salt substitutes with their doctor before using them. Even most people who take these medications can probably handle the recommended daily dose, typically 1/4 teaspoon, but I still recommend discussing this with your doctor if you have ever been told you have high potassium, if you take one of the medications above, or if you have any kind of kidney disease. Dear Abby, my husband's parents divorced 50 years ago when he was a newborn. Both remarried within a few years. My husband was raised by his mom and stepdad. His mother and father had little contact after their divorce. Because of that, my husband does not have a close relationship with his biological father, who made little effort to be in his life or the life of our children. Recently, both of my husband's step-parents passed away. After their passing, his mom and dad decided to get back together. They told us recently that they plan to remarry. My husband is having a hard time with their reunion. He feels they are rebounding from the death of their spouses. How can he learn to accept a relationship he doesn't agree with, but ultimately has no control over? Dear Abby responds, unless his mother and biological father can resolve the issues that drove them apart in the first place, their remarriage isn't likely to be successful. Suggest to your husband that he withhold judgment until he sees how the reunion works out. If he sees his mother is happy, he must accept that although he and his birth father may never be close, this was her choice. Another dear Abby. Shortly after my daughter's surgery, I got a text that I had received a food delivery gift from a friend. The text came from the delivery service with a photo of the package sitting at the front door. The trouble was, it wasn't my front door. The package had been delivered to the wrong address. What would be the polite way to address this? Of course, I want to thank the gift giver, but should I let them know I never actually got the gift? I'd feel bad having them put even more effort into their gift, as I know those delivery services can be a real hassle. And I wouldn't expect them to buy it again if, say, the food was re-delivered correctly later, but cold. Thanks for your advice. Dear Abby says, notify the delivery service of the screw-up. Then let your friends know you are grateful for their thoughtfulness, but do not want them charged for something that was misdelivered. They may want to dispute the charge on their credit card. And another dear Abby, my niece just had a baby. She's going to marry a man who has 2 children. I will be sending money to her child on birthdays and Christmas. Should I do the same for her husband's children? Dear Abby says, that would be a lovely gesture. If you didn't, it could cause resentment when the children become old enough to realize they were being treated as less than.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.